saw there were lots of like relations here what she was doing. It's really interesting to get that, but all of these things are not
aware. I'm guessing they'll give you a... What do you think?
What are you saying?
Will they give me
a sign, hopefully.
I would think so.
And then we saw her because you... Why not? We saw her because you... She was doing something with us.
Hi, welcome. Thanks to everyone for being here. I'm just sharing a quick film that Miss Major and I collaborated on that we thought would be a really wonderful way to ground the conversation with Miss Major and Eric. And this is the first time that she's ever seen it. So that's gonna be really exciting. And it's about 3 minutes long. It's called The Personal Things, and it was collaboration with Miss Major, myself, Micah Bazant, and Barnard Center for Research on Women. Thanks.
Now, one of the most exciting things to me is watching a girl go take a bus in the middle of the day in her shit. And I'm like, yes! Because when I was growing up, you know, you don't even look at your front door and the sun is out. I was like, okay, oh, I made my stuff and move into the backyard and run back in the house. If you were out and you were in your stuff, you could get arrested, you know. They came up with laws like you had to wear 3 articles of men's clothing if you were a transgender woman to arrest us and put us in jail. You were criminalized for just breathing, you know. What's wound up happening is it's gotten better, but it's not where it should be, you know. We don't get the respect that we deserve for the decisions and stuff that we've made. We are in this every day. Now, whether we display it outside ourselves or not, that doesn't change how you think and feel about yourself. You know, and we need to be given the respect and understanding to acknowledge that. You don't have to belong to an agency. You don't have to feel that, you know, that you're a part of this and you're in this group. You can be an individual person and do the things that you feel you can do to challenge the status quo. Period, you know. For me, not just all the stuff that I do politically, but on a personal level, what I did was change all of my identification back to male. Because it dawned on me, wait a minute, I did this because I didn't want pressure from people. I didn't want to be in the bathroom and they go, we're showing your ID, and it says male on it. So I did like everybody else did, had female on everything. And then it dawned on me, wait a minute, I don't feel female. I want people to know I'm a transgender person and love me for that. Fuck this other stuff. So I changed everything back to male. So that was my way to strike back. And you have to find your way to strike back. And it's a personal thing. You know, this group stuff is nice, and yeah, we have to get together and work on abolishing what's going on. But the personal stuff will give you the strength to go forward.
That was cute. Ah, love that picture. Cool. Okay, thanks. That's fine, baby, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. I'm good.
You good?
Yeah.
All right. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
So first, again, I want to acknowledge all the paid and unpaid labor that goes into making this happen, including the janitorial staff, our interpreters, and I also want to really acknowledge all the work that has been done to make this as accessible as possible. So I really want to shout out that, you know, disability justice is trans liberation. So let's give all those people some love. So as we know, Ms. Major needs no introduction, but I'm going to give her a very brief one because I think it's really important that we constantly remind her and each other and ourselves how important we are in the world. One does not meet Ms. Major. One encounters her. My first glimpse was over 20 years ago. I was a houseless youth precariously living in San Francisco's Bay Area. It was the mid-1990s, and I was spending a lot of time in the Tenderloin, the part of San Francisco that was mostly inhabited by homeless trans and queer youth, street-based sex workers, drug users, recent immigrants, in other words, our people. I entered TARC, the Tenderloin AIDS Resource Center, to get an HIV test. It was there, in the sterility of a public health clinic, that she entered the waiting room carrying boxes of clean syringes. I later learned that she was doing some outreach work through TARC. I had no idea who she was, but I knew her magnetism was beautifully fierce. It was not for probably another decade, through work with TIP, Transgender People in Prison, and TGIJP, Transgender, Gender Variant, Intersex Justice Project, that I really got to know Major, but the image of Major and her amazing kind of way of being in the world stuck with me from that first encounter. While Major's awards are many, and if you want a more biographical sketch of her life, definitely check out the new film, Major. Maybe some of you all saw it. I think it showed here a few months ago. But perhaps what I find most powerful about the radical force that is Major, yes, she is a force, is that she has built an underground railroad for black trans women who have recently been released from jails and prisons. She houses them, gives them money, listens to them, connects them to movement work, and most importantly, builds a community with them, all unpaid and unrecognized labor, which is to say, the labor of liberation. Major is legendary. She is a veteran of the Stonewall Uprising in New York City, and then became radicalized while doing time in Attica prison. She is a mentor and friend to countless trans and gender nonconforming people in the Bay Area and around the world. I'm lucky to not only call her a friend, but indeed to call her family. So please join me in welcoming Major. So what we're going to do, I'm going to start out with a few questions, we're going to get things going, and then we're going to open it up for some question and answer. And I'm going to try to be precise on time, because I know we have to be out of here at 10:30. All right. So Major gets interviewed a lot. She's chatting. She's a chatty lady. And, you know, I'm always interested in what questions do you want to be asked, right? What is interesting for you to talk about? And we just saw the ways in which she decided as a political act to change her IDs back to male. So I was wondering if you wanted to start off with kind of talking about why you did that, what inspired you to do that, and how that has been for you.
Okay. Well, thank you all for being here. First of all, it's really amazing to be in another country and have this kind of a response, because I'm just one of the girls in the background pushing shit forward. So thank you. You know, in changing my ID, it was a thing of, at the time, everybody was running around trying to be these women and stuff. And so you changed your name. You were Barbaras or Valeries or Gwendolyn's or whatever. And it just became an issue where, in order to not be harassed, and since I drive, have all my license email so I wouldn't get arrested, that this was for the government's sake. I didn't have a problem with mail on my ID because if I need to, I'll stand up and pee in a heartbeat. I don't have to go through this shit that they want to put me through. Mm-hmm. So I decided to just put everything back under the gender of male. And the amazing thing about that was the first time I got pulled over and they saw the cop said, oh, DMV made a mistake on your license. No, they didn't. Yes, it has mail. Yeah, it does. Well, you should go and tell them to change it. No, you all aren't going to arrest me for fraud. No, mail's fine. I'm good with that. It's okay. He said, look, lady. No, it's not lady. And it was just, you know, my way of standing up for who I am and what I believe in. You know, it's like, you know, I don't want to pass or be looked over or thought of something that is not what I'm trying to present. I'm trying to present me. And that's the only person that I know as well as I do, and so I have to keep that going forward.
Yes, definitely. So going back to, you spoke a little bit about it in the film as well, but I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about what it was like for you to be a trans person in the 1960s and 1970s. We can take it back a little bit. Just to give us some more historical context for where you're coming from.
Okay, so where's the disco ball in the music, honey? If we're going to go back in time, honey, we need to get it together. This ain't it. You know, as everybody knows, the 60s was a volatile and fun time everywhere. I mean, people in the United States and I've assumed around the world were trying to figure out who they were, what their identities were, and how to best be that person in that group that you were hanging around with and a part of in that sense. And what was your sense of family? Then along with that came the responsibility of, well, who am I? How am I responsible for my brother? How do I look out for other people besides just myself? And so it was a time of angst and fun and complete disregard for all the bullshit we'd been shoveled into our brains as children growing up at that time. And so it became a thing of where, you know, just the mere mention of somebody thinking about free love was just, oh my God, what are the hookers going to do? So, like, you know, so there was a lot of contention. You know. But as things progressed and got settled, it became a really interesting and fun period, you know. And so in that, what wound up happening was as the 70s came into being, it started to personalize itself. It became more concerned about me instead of others, you know. Mm. And so when that started to happen, people started dressing up at nights to go out and starting to, you know, like guys are wearing suits and top hats and girls are dressing up and really hitting it, you know what I mean? Mm. And since at that time fashion was just starting to accept and deal with micro mini skirts and stuff, you know. And so it became a time of, child, you were tall like me and great legs. Honey, a pair of 3-inch heels, you hit it, it was on. And you made real good money.
Yes.
So you started to have to pay for love again, and that was how rent got paid, cars got bought. But it was an interesting time, you know, and it wasn't the time of where people really thought about what was happening to their neighbors or to their friends and stuff. So, and I was put in prison at that time, so I was in there when I realized, you know, that the things that were going on far exceeded what my grasp of stuff was.
Right. So you've talked about being radicalized in Attica, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that. I mean, you were starting to.
Well, what wound up happening was when the Attica riots happened, I was up in Dannemora State Prison. And when they stepped in and killed all those people and took the prison back, what they did was they sent all of the young men who were involved in that riot to Dannemora, where I was at, and put them in the hole where I was at, there. So, in meeting them, I got to talk with them and I got to form some really good relationships with those guys, especially Frank Smith, who they called Big Black at the time. And he was charming and smart and just an intelligent man. And he talked to me and explained to me that there were other things going on outside in New York and the world that included more than just my girls. And that if I was going to help my girls, then I needed to realize that you need to help everybody so that your group can also be saved. And so it became an issue of informing me and giving me books to read and talking to me about the other things that were going on, you know. And it made me aware that if I'm going to help my community, I need to be aware of all of the pitfalls that are around us, not just the ones I could see, but the ones who weren't there. And so that's when I learned that the prison industrial complex is like an octopus with tentacles that we have no idea where they are, and some are invisible.
Right, definitely. So as we all know, Miss Major is one of the driving forces behind the prison abolitionist movement, at least in the United States, and she's really helped us think about the ways in which trans, queer, and gender nonconforming people are particularly targeted in specific ways. And so I would like for you to talk a little bit about TIP and about TGIJP and how y'all started, where you came from, the kind of organizing questions.
Okay, TIP really got started with Alex Lee in trying to figure out and focus on transgender women and gender nonconforming people that were being housed in the prison system, and to help them understand the abuses that they were going through and to make it more aware for the public to understand what was happening and not overlook or ignore the things that were happening. And from this grouping of different people, young radical people like yourselves who are out to try to change things and make it better, it became a matter of sorting out whether or not we were trying to help the system and ingratiate stuff and make help it work better or get rid of it entirely. And so through sorting out the different abuses that were happening and the letters we were receiving and talking to the trans women and gender nonconforming people in the prison system, that we decided that we were an abolitionist group of people, that we don't need them at all. They weren't built for our protection and our safety, and they are still not there for our protection and safety. When they close one prison, they do that and go, oh, look, we closed this prison because of overcrowding. Then why the hell are you building two more prisons on the other side of town under the cover of darkness? You know, that's the shit that we have to stop. You know, yeah, we see what you're doing, and you're not going to do this without somebody else paying attention to it and stop it. And so what wound up happening in that regard was it became a matter of making sure that things became all-inclusive, you know, that it was a system whereby not only are none of my girls going to get thrown on under a bus, but we're not letting anybody get thrown under the bus. If we don't save all of us, none of us are saved.
Yes. So one of the things that was your requested question, which I'm really excited to talk to you about, it's shifting gears a little bit, but I think it's really related, is the question of the desexualization of older folks in our movement. And so I was like, what do you never get asked? And she's like, well, I never get to talk about sex, and I want to talk about sex. And so here we are. And you know, and I think that it's so powerful and so amazing and so central to our movement, and oftentimes gets regulated to, like, I think that we reproduce some of the same morals as normative culture, and I think that you really help remind us how important that is. So,
well, you know, the thing about that is a lot of the people in this room are younger people, and you're charged up and full of energy about making a difference, changing the world, and using all of your things to help to make it a better place for other people to live, not just yourselves. And in that regard, you have to consider that it isn't just young people who have been out doing this this movement, that there were your parents and there were people before them who were doing stuff, or women would not have the right to vote over in the States. And so it's a matter of making sure that in these thoughts about who we are and what sexuality is and how that plays into everything. I mean, there wouldn't be advertisement if sex wasn't involved in it. And then in doing that, sex is a wonderful thing, but let's also consider gender. Everything isn't male and female. There are variations on all of that. And along with that, none of that stuff has anything to do with age. You know, I'm going to be a 75-year-old transgender person, and I'm sorry, honey, there's snow on the roof, but the fireplace is hot. You know, and in the wonderful film, oh, Rena, thank you, thank you, thank you, you showed my caddy, my precious baby, and it took me a while to get T.S. Cougar put on the license plate, you know, and I just wanted people who drove by and saw me in my car to realize, oh, I can go talk to her because that bitch is hot. She's old, but she's hot, and so I chase it. Let's say, oh, has to be over 18. Okay, 18 up to, I'll go to 70. I'm not dating anybody older than me. I don't have time. Yeah. And so it's a matter of making sure that, you know, people understand that in doing that, it's a form, an expression of communicating with other people. It's a sense of sharing, you know what I mean? And it has nothing to do with what you can or can't perform. Yeah, I don't do, you know, I don't stand on my hand anymore and suck dick. I now sit down, you know, so that's okay. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, I don't have to do it that way anymore, you know. And things change. I can't do everything I used to do, but what I do, I do well, you know. And if I can, you know, since I can't go to a bar and dance and shake my booty and attract some boy, I go to rentaboy.com and pay for what I want, have it done, and then go home. Because I'm not cooking for you, I ain't washing your dirty fucking drawers, and when I'm through with you, you need to go home.
So, the shy Miss Major. So something related to that is the importance of what you talk about, or how you talk about taking care of yourself, and how important it is for us to practice self-care as a community act, right? So it's not just about you, but about continuing to build our networks. And so, along with sex, what are some of the other ways that you can take care of yourself or that have been really useful for you? What are some of the tools that you can maybe pass along to other people that are struggling to figure out how to balance, if there is such a thing, you know, the relationship between sustaining yourself, growing movements, being present with yourself, you know, what you call kind of resisting burnout?
Well, you know, the thing about that is all of those things is a balancing act that each one of us has to do on our own. You really have to take the time to consider what the things are that mean something to the inside of you, to how you think, how you feel, the things that make you want to cry or that have you want to snuggle up with somebody or your pet or whatever. It's a matter of sorting out in your fighting for this resilience that we're looking for, this change that we're trying to make happen. You have to make sure that part of that is taking care of yourself. Part of that is laughter, because no matter how dark the damn tunnel is, there's always a light. And if you can't find it, you keep going till you see one. Mm. And you don't ever give up. You never say, oh shit, I can't do it. Yes, you can. You just have to keep moving forward. And so for me, on a personal level, it became a matter of I
never buy a car newer than 1976. I just don't feel safe in them. I feel like Walt Disney's moose in a fucking clown car, and I'm not going there. I'm already a big girl. I already have a lot of body to put in this bitch, and I have a coat and a purse. There's no room. You know, so I have to have an older car. And then, if I'm getting angst over something, I just take a drive somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was growing up, that was the thing to do. Get in a car and drive, say, from Chicago to Detroit, or hit a road during autumn like it is now, where the leaves are turning. And you get to smell the fresh open air, you know. And so, you know, I've had a couple of convertibles before, but nothing like the big baby I have now. So when things get tiring or upsetting for me, I take a drive, you know. And since I live, you know, near an ocean, I'll go walk along the ocean sometime, you know, and cuss God out for the shit that she's pulling down here and not changing, you know, because that's the only place I can talk to that bitch and know that she's going to hear me here because I'm here alone. No one else is here praying and giving her a hard time but me, so I'm sure she's listening, you know. You know, and so in doing that, it helps me to feel some solace, you know, to recharge my batteries and to keep me going so that, you know, in doing the stuff that you have to do, sometimes, you know, you have to work and negotiate and handle and deal with people who don't understand, who aren't a part of your particular ilk, or who simply don't get it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of self-righteous, ass-toed motherfuckers whose butts so big they scratch their butt with their head. You know what I mean? Well, and going through that stuff, you have to be able to deal with them. Because you need to realize the folks that you can help, you do. The folks that you can't, you can try and then step back. You know, we have nothing to lose by stepping back to take care of ourselves. Because another hard thing about this, especially in you all's youth, is you can't save everybody. You know, it'd be nice if we could. Oh, everyone's going to be okay. We're all going to have sunshine, rainbows, and unicorns. Not necessarily so. Some bitches want dirt, devil, and mud. Let them have it and go on about their business and keep yourself involved in what you need to do to change things. And so that's the best way I found to go about it.
Yeah. Yeah, something that you and I have talked a lot about is this contemporary moment, right, where everybody wants some kind of trans something. We see it on the TV, we see it we see it in the newspaper, organizations want it, they want to give money to certain kinds of trans people. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about that. What are you thinking about this particularly strange, possibly interesting, probably horrific moment that we're living in?
Well, I think the interesting thing about this is all of a sudden, we've become the flavor of the month. You know, it's kind of like I'm a part of Baskin and Robbins, you know. So it's like, ooh, today it's Miss Major and Blue Balls. You know, who the hell knows? But, you know. And so in going through that, what winds up happening is the people who are a part of the rest of the world don't understand why that's happening and really don't give a shit whether my community lives or dies or not. Mm-hmm. And in going through this, what happens is these organizations who, oh, well, we do transgender services. Well, they wouldn't know a transgender person if it walked in there and slapped them in the fucking face because they've never dealt with one. They've never seen anybody. And the images that they have are images that aren't real to the girls who have to live and survive in their city, in their area, and around where they work. You know, having Laverne Cox on the cover of Time magazine was a really wonderful and momentous thing. It doesn't free anybody, you know what I mean? It turns people who are in other countries like Brazil or South America to whereby the murder rate went up, in a sense, when that kind of thing happened. Because they can't get to her, but they can get to the girl walking down the street trying to make her money to pay her rent, get her food, keep herself alive. Well, they'll go kill her and feel this, oh, this will show them. Well, that's really cute, but that's not how you're supposed to do things. Mm-hmm. That's not the way to get along in this world with other people since we're all a part of one another. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it becomes, for me, very aggravating to see it in movies whereby there are people who are not transgender people playing roles of transgender people, which is really nice. I'm so glad that, you know, you're a really good actor, but bitch, you're not one of us. You know, I'm sorry. This just doesn't make any sense to me.
you know. And so if they're going to ask me how I feel about it, these motherfuckers need to throw their body in reverse, back up about 10 fucking feet from the rest of us, and start over again, and don't come down this road. Go down the road you were born to go down. Leave mine alone. There's no time for this, you know what I mean? And there's no way that they can rectify this. And yes, they want to give money because, oh, right now it's the thing to do. Mm-hmm. Well, that's cute. What are they going to do when they stop feeling we're the mm-hmm. thing to do? They're not giving us money to protect us. They're not making sure that more girls live, more girls have access to the money that they need to survive. Because if they get rid of criminalizing us for just breathing, we can actually do some damn thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Can't get a job, can't get training, can't get in school, can't find a person to be with you to love you for who you are as to who they want you to be. And that has to do with friendship in itself. Friends wanting people to be what they need them to be instead of what the people need to be for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know? And until we can correct all that and get people to wake up and realize what the hell they're doing, that they're oppressing people that they said they care about or love. That's not love.
You know? Yeah. Yes, yes. So you just mentioned the kind of enormous violence that happens to trans women, particularly trans women of color, right? Mm-hmm. We know in the U.S. Every year is a kind of the murder rate, the accounted for murder rate goes up and up and up, right? At the same mm-hmm. time that visibility is going up and up and up, and I think you mm-hmm. just beautifully kind of connected the two. But in living with in living in this moment and in living with moments of loss, how do you sit with that? How do you kind of carry on in that really intense reality?
You know, I do the things that I tell these young people to do. You know, sometimes you have to step back. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't be out there fighting all the time. You got to rest. You got to recharge your batteries. You got to rethink what it is you're doing and why you're doing it. Because things change. Mm-hmm. Moments change. Momentum alters. And if you don't change with that, it will go on and leave you behind. Mm-hmm. And then what do? Well, then you're lost. You don't know who you are. Your identity fails. And your identity isn't how you present. It's what you do. You know, and so for me, when girls are dying, I just lost two really close girls down south. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of you cry about it happening and then put on some Billie Holiday or Nina Simone, have a glass of wine, sit there and cuss out God, nature, air, earth, the people upstairs, folks in the store, and then get myself together, take a bath, buy a new wig, change my makeup, and go out there and give them absolute and total hell. Because just going out there and doing that makes somebody pay for the shit that they put my girls through by killing them, you know? And so in doing that kind of thing, you have to alter and change. You have to learn how to take this stuff on in your stride, because you can't let it kill you, you can't let it stop you, and you can't give up. No matter what happens, you can't give up. You've got to always go forward. You know, sometimes you have to step back, good. Step back, catch your breath, whew, and then go forward.
So one of the taglines that is so important to many of us is something you like to say a lot, which is, I'm still fucking here, right?
That's so true.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And it's so beautiful, right? I'm still fucking here. And you allegedly recently retired from TGIJP, and it's, you know, you keep talking about stepping back, and I'm like, girl, no, you ain't stepping back. and so you have this really amazing plan for possibly relocating partly to Arkansas, and I think it's, do you want to share some about that?
Sure. Well, you know, stepping back doesn't mean stopping.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't step back and stop. I'm still breathing. My yep. girls are still suffering. And I'm still transgendered. Until that changes, I have to keep fighting. And I don't think my dick is going anywhere. It's been with me 75 years. It's very happy, and I'm cool with it. So mm-hmm. I just have to keep going. I stopped that because my focus needed to change to do other stuff.
Yes.
With what I could do with that, I had gone as far as I could go to help my community. Yeah. I've decided to go down south in the States to help the girls who live down there, simply because the girls who are living in the southern part of the United States are suffering like the transgender women who are living in South America, Peru and Rio, and they don't go out in the daytime still. Well, that's what I went through in Chicago in the 50s. Well, this is 2016. You know, what the hell's going on? They don't have Confederate flags up anymore. So it's kind of like the South wishes that the South had won the war. Guess what? You didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, we won, so get your shit together, you know. And so I decided to move down there for a few months to see what the needs are for my girls and to start some kind of meeting place or a camp for us to come to and meet each other and know each other, so that the girls who like to live in the South don't have to go to San Francisco or New York or L.A. to live. Mm-hmm. If you like living in the South, then why the hell can't you continue to live in the fucking South? Oh, because of these motherfuckers that are around you. Well, good, then let's make these motherfuckers pay so you can stay where you need to be for you. Now, if you need to go to San Francisco to get extra hormones or get some surgery, good. But when you get it, take your black ass back home.
In thinking also about this contemporary, this kind of moment that we're in, you were recently the Grand Marshal of San Francisco's LGBT Pride Festival, and I know that they were not so great to you, and so I wanted you to talk a little bit about the ways in which you personally kind of get held up and then pulled back down by these kinds of organizations.
Well, you know, it isn't just organizations. It's the community that support them. Mm-hmm. It's usually gay, white, attitude men and lesbians. And I don't mean the cute, pretty, lovely, I got it together, lipstick lesbians. I mean the brutes that can chew up a motorcycle and spit out tacks that they chew up an anvil. It's a group of people that feel as if my ladies and guys shouldn't exist. And so the problem comes with in this socialized shit that they feel that they have, and not acknowledging that they have white privilege. You can ask them, oh, well, I've never used white privilege. Bitch, just the fact that you said that, you've used white privilege. You know, excuse me, who the hell do you think you're talking to? It's like, oh yeah, I have black friends. Oh, no shit, that's your maid, bitch. You don't serve us in the house. What's going on? You know, so in trying to get this stuff together, it was really hard. Mm-hmm. They have all this criteria of what you have to do. You have to go to the dinner, and you have to go to the meeting, and you have to be, you know, appropriately attired. What the fuck is appropriately attired? And I'm sorry, if you're going to take me to a meeting and I'm talking, then you need to listen to me. Mm-hmm. Those motherfuckers were sitting there on the cell phone, making dates. I guess they were ordering clothes, buying laundry, getting more lube. You know what I mean? I don't know what the fuck they were doing. But whatever it wasn't listening to the people who were there. And for the time that I was that Grand Marshal, there were three other transgendered people that were in that parade. And when they got up to spoke, they did the very same thing. And I'm sorry, just because I'm old, that doesn't mean you can just ignore me or act as if I'm not there. I'm a big bitch. You got to be awfully blind and not see me. You know what I mean? So don't bump into me and go, oh, I'm excuse you. Really? Child, I will knock your dick in the dirt. You fuck around with me. I don't play. You know, I didn't get to 75 being sweet and gender. I'm no flower. What that shit? I'm a cactus, and get over it.
So, like I talked about at the beginning, there's a really amazing documentary about your life. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what it was like to be the subject of a documentary and then to get to be able to see it, right? Like what that process was like for you, because you had, versus the kind of mainstream representation where you have no control over it, you were heavily involved in the process. So I want you to talk a little bit about how that was for you.
Well, you know, it was interesting because it's not something that I thought would ever happen. You know, in starting out as a younger person, of course, you don't know who to talk to, and you feel as if you're alone and no one else in the world has the issues or the problems that you have. And then as you get older and do more things, you go, oh, there's other people. And so you may meet one person. Ooh, there's two of us. And through time, you learn that there's others. And then there's a community. And so having this happen, it's just breathtaking and awe-inspiring for me, because I think that it gives an opportunity to people who don't understand our community or feel as if, oh, well, they're the X factor, you know, and you can't really know them, and they're not worthwhile, and they're not really human, and okay, then you need to run out to the forest and marry a Yeti and back up off of me. You know, and in going through that, what wound up happening with this was I got an opportunity to go over a lot of things that have happened. And when I watch it, it takes me back in my mind to what things happened in my life that accumulated for that comment to be there and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it interesting for me. And I hope that it gives a tendency for the community to realize that all of them can do this, you know. I'm not that special. I'm just one of the girls, you know. And I'm trying to survive and exist and live like everybody else is, you know. And being an older person, it's harder than it used to be, because I can't just run out and turn a quick trick now. I got so much shit to shut up now, it ain't even funny. I need to make sure my cane's by the bed, my pills are on the headboard, the lube is where I can reach it. You know, there's too much stuff to go through. But I'll do what I need to do to make it, because I'm not going to go down without a fight.
Yes, yes. So you've given, since I've known you, you've given so much amazing, really important advice to me and to all of us. And what are some of, you've talked a little bit about it, but are there other things that you want the girls kind of coming up today to know that, you know, you wish that somebody would have told you, or that you feel is really important for them to be able to carry on?
Well, you know, I want them to realize that the pressures and stuff that we have to go through as trans women really makes us a tough bunch of bitches, you know, because we go through the abuses that people give us directly as we're growing up, from our families who are supposed to love us and care about us. And the moment they get this news, like the stupidest question my parents ever said to me was, oh, why couldn't you just be gay? I said, oh, did you think about that for a minute? Just be gay? How boring is that, y'all? Well, I don't want to just be anything, y'all, please. I'm lovely. I had to throw myself, you know? And going through that, you get a tough skin, you know? And I want the girls to realize that in doing that, it doesn't have to make them hard or bitter or angry. You know, that we deserve to be here. We have a right to be here. And all we have to do is figure out how to negotiate through this straight world, as everybody else does who's not white, and maintain and hold on to the ground that you're standing on, you know, and to keep yourself safe and to stay strong, and not physically strong. I mean, you don't need to go to a damn gym, but keep yourself mentally, spiritually, and emotionally strong. Keep yourself together, you know, and ward off the things that could bring you personal and detrimental kind of harm, because those are the things that are hard to get over. Somebody fight me, well, good, I'll heal. No, but you say something or call me faggot as I'm walking along down the street, I'll remember that 2 days later. I'll see something to remind me that you said that to me, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I want the girls to be able to shield that stuff and to have it roll off them like water does off a duck's back, so that they can be strong and resilient and be the best people that they can be, and realize that we don't have to fight everybody, because everybody doesn't hate us, you know. I have, you know, I really want to choke half the gay white men that I know, but there are two or three that are really nice and friendly, you know, and I get along with, you know. So I want them to be able to do that, you know, and I want them to realize that in that, and in the unity and the sisterhood, brotherhood that we share as trans people, there's a strength. Mm-hmm. there's a history, there's a culture, and that there are shoulders that they are standing on who came before them for them to have the liberties and stuff that they have today. Because it wasn't always like this, you know. The girls couldn't just be at an event like this and be chewing it and doing their thing as you can now. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a time that you went out your front door, you were attacked immediately. When you were arrested, when I was younger, they put you in a mental hospital mm-hmm. because they thought that we were crazy people and not worth going to jail, mm-hmm. you know. So once jail started making so much money, all of a sudden, oh, now they can throw your ass in jail, mm-hmm. you know. And it became a matter of making sure that in doing that, that the girls realized that they're not alone, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? That there's other girls that they can talk to and rely on. You know, that's why I opened up my home to girls to stay. Not that I'm taking my work home, because technically that's not work mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. It's to give them a sense of appreciation of who they are and that they deserve this and that they need to have family. That's why a lot of the girls call me mom or grandma now or whatever, you know. And that's fine. I think that that's an honor that they would choose to do that, you know. And it makes a difference, you know. We have to support and love one another, you know. Because if they think about it, you know, eunuchs are in the Bible. Those are transgender people, you know. And if they want to go back to it, just why did Cain kill Abel? Oh, that bitch borrowed my perfume. Smack.
Bible study with Miss Major.
Yeah. Oh, we can really go there with Samson and Delilah.
Kind of being aware of time, and also I think that's an amazing way to segue into questions from the audience. I want to leave enough time so that it can be participatory and people can ask questions, comments, conversation with Major.
So me and I can ask
I think there's some microphones going around.
Microphone? How about some light? All I see is
you nothing. You want the house lights? Or
that would be nice. It'd be nice to see who's there.
Maybe they can.
We'll get that sorted.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. That a spotlight of a fine guy anyway.
Hi, I just have a quick aside. There was actually 6 genders in the Torah, but that's that's it.
6. I think there's one over there.
Hello. Yeah, I just want to ask, there will be in future more Miss Majors. So I just want to ask you a question that, what makes you not to give up and what really motivates you? And obviously there will be some times in your life that, you might feel this is so hard. So what makes you keep on going and, what pushes you to, to continue it and to be Miss Major?
Well, you know, honey, the interesting thing about that is I'm still breathing, so I got to push at something. I don't know how to be quiet and sit delicately in a corner. And as long as things aren't the way they should be, somebody has to keep fighting. You just can't give up. Take a break, yeah, but go back, you know, and never say quit or die. Just don't do it. And yeah, it's hard. And no, it's not easy. But if I don't do it, who's going to do it? You know? And hopefully, yeah, there will be other Miss Majors. I only have one son, so it won't be him. But, you know, there are people out there like you all. There are girls here who can take up the mantle, you know? I'm not going to live forever. 100 will be good. But forever, no. You know, so it's the thing of making sure that my community's safe and that they're okay and that they have the sense and the width and the wherewithal to look out for one another.
Is that working? Hi. Miss Major, it's such an honor to be in your presence. Honestly, as a black trans woman, it's been such a feat to believe that I could ever get to an age. So yeah, thank you so much for your example. I think, yeah, looking at the links between experience being trans in the UK and America, I think looking towards your system, I first heard of CC McDonald maybe a couple of years ago, and like in my ignorance hoped that it was an isolated incident. I work with Bent Bars Project, bentbarsproject.org. Looking for volunteers, just to let you know. Excuse me, we watched a documentary about the New Jersey Four, about four black lesbians who were locked up for defending themselves. And yeah, as a survivor myself, and even though I've been fortunate to yet to find, you know, places of safety, it is a concern to me, how do I defend myself? You know, in the event of me ending up in the system, you know, there are one or two rich white lawyers I can call and say, hey, sweetie. But, you know, if they don't, you know, in the event of physically, how would you advise us girls to defend ourselves? But also, when we do find ourselves in that position, what do you think we should do to get ourselves out of that position? Just saying, asking.
You know, the hard part about that, dear, is no matter what situation we find ourselves in, they're going to make it our fault. It doesn't matter what you do. So there is no safe way to go about it. There are things that you can do to try to keep it a little more open so that there are other people to witness this besides just you. Boys or people chase you or they're coming to beat you up or whatever have you, our natural instinct, of course, is to fight to survive, because we're not going to just go down. The thing is that, though, when we do that, we're the people that get arrested, because the premise is we did something to scare or startle them. Really? For them? Little me, just startle the shit out of them. Well, they need to go somewhere and have a circle jerk and get happy and leave me the fuck alone. The other thing that you need to keep in mind is, in doing those things and you see that kind of thing happening, be aware always of your surroundings, always. And if you see somebody twice out of the side of your eye that you haven't seen before, or you've seen, watch them. And then keep yourself in spaces that are open and public. Don't duck into a building corridor, or try to shoot down an alley or someplace, because then they'll corner you, do what they want to you, and claim, well, she started it, you know. And of course, the government's going to believe that you started it, because they're equally afraid of us, you know. Why they're afraid of us is because we're strong, we're resilient, and they know that we know how to handle ourselves mentally, spiritually, physically, and emotionally. So they can't get to us. They're not going to browbeat us. They're not going to put us underneath their foot and grind us into the ground without us stepping up and letting people know, like he said, I'm still fucking here.
Hola. Well, some questions. I would like to know your relationship to feminism, your relationship to other social struggles, and I would like to know what do you feel, what do you think about all these laws for gender identity, which are running in many countries.
Oh, okay. Well, as far as my feminism goes, back in the 80s, when there was a lot of stuff going on, a lot of the trans women were working with women in regards to making sure that every effeminate person got their rights, because it included all of us. Making sure that there was equal pay for equal work was important. Making sure that they backed up off of those abortion laws, because even though we can't have children, that's your body. You need to decide what you need to do with it on your terms. And that same thing affects us in regards to our hormones and who we are and the work that we have done. So I don't want them motherfuckers telling me what to do with my body either. You know, and so I work with different people in regards to that back then. Now, because of this thing with they're going through with prostitution, I'm involved with Desiree Alliance over in the States to go to the Hookers Conference. Because if I can, I will. I'm still hooking. I buy boys who hook. And so I want to make sure that they realize that they need to stop penalizing people for doing that to survive. Until they start arresting their wives for hooking, they need to leave the rest of the girls alone. You know? Because I'm sorry, anytime you tell somebody, oh, baby, I need a new fridge, do me. That's hooking. I need a new car, baby. Oop, here it is. Get it, daddy. Okay, that's hooking. Arrest that bitch, and then I won't have a problem with you coming after me. But she needs to go to jail first. You know? And so I'm doing my best to make sure that those kind of things get taken care of and that they get rid of this law. You know, there doesn't need to be a law against prostitution. You know, if women weren't prostituting, Eve would have only had one child.
Bible study.
Yes.
There you go. Hey, I'm going to start a church. Fuck this.
I think you already have.
Is it me? Hi.
Hey.
Thank you. This is, I want that Bible study class one. And this is fabulous. Thank you. I want to talk about bodies because as gender norm conforming people and as people of color and as disabled people, our bodies are meant to be this like site of tragedy and trauma and sadness. And the world we live in often makes that the case, mm-hmm. but I feel like there isn't enough space to talk about the ways in which our bodies are actually sources of joy, sources of pleasure, hugging, fucking, eating. There's so many things. There's a narrative that really troubles me, which I fell into for sure because it's so strong, with the medicalizing thing of like, you are at odds with your body and you must fix it. And that has always felt to me like it's the wrong way round. It's like, you are at odds, we are at odds with what you are, so you have to fix yourselves for us. I guess bodies feel like, bodies for me have been a really passionate, important thing, as well as a source of stress. And I feel like I would, if that's something that interests you.
Are you kidding? Bodies? Oh, please. Did you miss this, honey? The fireplace is going. Of course.
I figured you would.
Oh, honey, trust. Hey, I have a child, natural child. He didn't fall out of the sky. So, yes, I like bodies. And they can take any shape or form that they choose to. I'm at the Lauren Hotel. What is it? Room 314. Okay, got that.
She's not kidding, y'all.
You know, the thing is that in going to that, people don't take the time to appreciate what it is that their bodies do for them. And even in what we're doing as people working for social justice and making the world right, there still isn't the time to understand that the communication that we have with one another, the best form of it, isn't necessarily verbal. It has to do with touch and caring and emotions and feelings. And so, this thing about man and woman, that's really cute, but what about the mixtures of this stuff? You know, it's like you don't make a cake with just flour and salt.
Where's the butter? Where's the egg? Where's the other stuff that goes into this for the results to be something other than what it started out as? And yes, you know, we have to continue to be involved with that, because taking on some kind of hedonist attitude about that kind of stuff makes it a pleasurable thing. Because yes, you know, a lot of the girls, my trans women, feel as if, well, they're not who they need to be unless they've had the complete surgeries done, or they're not complete women. And that's really cute, and I thought about that in my youth, but I came to the conclusion that, okay, first of all, I'm never going to be a female person. I got that. Now, I'm going to look pretty as one, and I got that. But in making sure that I enjoy who I am going to be a transgender person everywhere I go. I don't want to pass. I don't want you looking at me and going, oh, yes, ma'am, may I help you? Because if you say it funny, I'm going to let you know, excuse me, that's sir. You know? And as far as the thing the lady's talking about, those laws that are going on, I'm sorry, they're going to tell people who what bathroom they're going to use in order for them to feel safe when they're out in public. Well, until you put male and female bathrooms in every private home that exists, you need to let me pee where I gotta pee at. I'm not going to go through that. Now, if you want to pretend this is France in 1890, good. I'll run out to the curb, do my little tinkle, and go on about my damn business. Yeah. So, yes, that is important. And it's always something that you need to do, because politics creates very strange bedfellows, if you let it. So enjoy, honey. All of you, do enjoy. Answer the question. You could see that.
The lights are.
I just want to thank you for something that you said on Thursday, that just because we take ourselves out of the struggles we are dealing with, that doesn't mean that people are not going to keep on fighting. Mm-hmm. And it felt so personal at that point, because I always feel that I have to keep fighting all the time, and that if I don't do it, no one else is going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you, sweetheart. You know, it's always best to keep that kind of thing in mind, because you don't want to exhaust yourself chasing after something that is not going to respond. You know, for the people that want the help, work with them. Show them what to do so that the two of you can fight side by side, and then treat and train other people so that it's a continuous flow of action to get rid of the bullshit that's oppressing all of us. Thank you. Y'all are so slick.
Are there questions?
Oh, cool. Okay, everybody's done. Let's party. Yay!
There's one over there. Maybe it'll be the last one. We'll see.
Thank you for your...
water.
Thank you for your words and the film. And I also had a question about the bathroom laws, because for me it often feels, especially how I feel it working out, it's not so much about peeing always, but it feels like the old program to get back on the agenda that trans women are rapists, which they have been bullying us with for a long time. Mm. And for a few years, it was less. And I start to feel it that mothers pull their children away when we are around. And it is strongly, it's very difficult to say it also out loud, that it's very strongly back on the agenda to harass us in public where we go. And I wonder, since you worked through so much, what is a good strategy to deal with that? How can we address that? And how can we address that with our friends that sort of, you know, don't know what to do.
I got it, honey. Just hang on. You know, the thing about that is they've always tried to oppress us. Once they realized that we were becoming out more, that we were becoming more visible, then the push came to put us back into the closets that they think we all came from. What these people don't realize is when most of us came out of the closet, we burnt the house down. I don't have a closet to go back to. So this is it. And in dealing with this bathroom issue, it's way more than just where we can use the bathroom. Yes, they want the community to feel as if we're all rapists, because they're not going to take the time to look at the statistics or that we're pedophiles. Wow, let me think. Last time I checked, 98% of the pedophiles are straight guys. You know? And as far as being rapists, last thing I know, women don't rape people. You know, so they are really working on trying to do this and put fear in people in order to make them want to put pressure on us. The best thing that we can do is hold on to who we are, continue to be the people we need to be, and fight it and be as resilient as humanly possible. You know, even though my ID says male, I have no problem walking into a women's bathroom and let them deal with it. Okay, so I'm going to stand up and pee, and my head is above the top. Big deal, I'm tall. You know, how I'm doing this is nobody's business but my own unless you're in there with me. And if you're in there, you better be doing more than watching me pee. You know, and so hang on, sweetheart. I know it's depressing and it's frustrating and it's scary for us, because the next step after that is if they can't cower us like they do cows and put us in a certain section, they're going to start killing us. You know, it's going to be targets on our back, you know. And we just have to deal with that and keep going and make them pay every chance we get. All of us. I'm working on it from my end. Don't you worry.
Maybe one final question. Is there anybody?
Hi. I guess my question relates to how you keep that resilience going. Like, I often find that when people are coming for me and my friends and the people in my community, that the anger and rage that I feel about it can I set myself on fire and I burn myself out just through that feeling. And you talk a lot about the resiliency and maintaining that resiliency. And I'm just interested in how you do that and how you advise others to do that.
Well, you know, the anger and stuff comes with the territory because, you know, it's just wrong what they're doing. And it's natural to get angry about it and frustrated and try to do something. But you can't take it to an extreme of blowing up a building or, you know what I mean, shooting somebody. Of course, I do have a gun, but that has nothing to do with this. It's more or less a thing of making sure that in your anger and your frustration, you think about doing things to correct the situation and the problem. That you don't let this anger and frustration drive you to a point of doing something that you have no chance of turning around and coming back from. Because it's easy when you're angry to cross that line of no return, and then you're stuck there. In order to keep things going and to make a difference, we have to be, as a community, fluid. We have to be able to bend with the breeze, give and take, go and come as we need to. We can't afford to be rigid or angry or pissed off to the point of frustration. Like, it amazes me that people who drive cars are in their car beating up the steering wheel and cussing out somebody who cut them off. And who does that bother? Because the person that cut you off is gone. You're the lunatic in your car beating up the steering wheel, cussing them out. Your blood pressure is going up. That child is gone. You know, so take care of you in going through this. And yes, I get angry and I tell myself, should I just run out there and beat up a tree or go throw a rock in the ocean or let some eggs go bad and throw them against some car? You motherfucker. You know what I mean? Let him clean that shit off. You know, but you work out things that are going to help, you know. If you need to, you know, at your home and you really get upset about something, throw a glass against the wall. I find it very relaxing. Just, motherfucker. You know, I can buy another damn glass, and I'm in there alone, so no one's going to take me to jail, and I'm not out, so no one got hurt, and deal with it like that. But do the things that you need to do to keep that kind of thing in control, because it's important with the work that we do that we're going to become frustrated, and we're going to be angry, and the system is not going to do things that are nice, right, and correct, proper, or just. They don't know what any of that is. And if you ask them to be fair, they'll give you the money to get on a bus because they don't know what fair is. We've got to hold on to who we are as we go through this, because the only way that we're going to make this is that we survive it. And the test is in the pudding, like they say.
Mm, yes.
Stand up and be counted. Yes. Make a difference. And have somebody say, guess what, bitch? I'm still fucking here.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, sweetie. Thank you.
Wow. I'm gonna cry.
Thank you all so much. Also, I wanted to give a quick plug. There are some copies of Captive Genders out there, and all the books that are sold, all the profits that are made go to give people inside in jails and detention centers books for free, and Ms. Major has a piece in it, and I'm sure she would sign one of them for you, and also a bunch of other people in the audience as well. So thank you again. Thank you for all your labor, and...
Thanks, boo-boo.
No, thank you.
Thank you all for being here. Be safe. Safe journeys home, and see y'all tomorrow. Oh, that was easy.